The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. It's your call for the best college football coverage. From National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between, CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Barton Simmons. I'm Chip Patterson. Barton in Nashville, Chip in Fort Lauderdale.
At, here at the home of CBS Sports HQ, CBS Sports Digital, and Barton, how are we doing? As we sit here to approach the Big Ten, the SEC, win totals are counting down. How are we feeling right now?
Good. You got your coat and tie on right now?
You know it.
Nice.
How'd you know?
Hey, you know, just kind of got to get spruced up when you're with the corporate big wigs up there, and they're down there in Fort Lauderdale. So that's good. That's good. Glad to have you from the big studio. I'm feeling good, man. I'm kind of in awe at the athletic accomplishments going on out there. Have you seen this guy that won $3 million playing Fortnite?
No. $3 million?
16-year-old kid wins $3 million. Playing Fortnite, and I know this isn't really necessarily relevant to what we're talking about, but like, to me, that's almost on par with like winning the 100-meter dash. Like, everybody runs, right? And so that's sort of the greatest athletic achievement, is winning the 100-meter dash. This 16-year-old kid is better at this game that I've never played, that everyone in the world is playing, it seems like. So I just was looking at that on Twitter as I was waiting for you to get on this call, and I was taken aback by the athletic achievement going on by this kid.
Do you think that there is any e-sport or video game that you would feel like you could go and compete and win $3 million in?
I haven't played video game. Like, I hate – I'm I, every single
jock,
day
– classic I, jock.
I turn into more and more of like this old man. Like, I don't even have a video game system anymore. I played my ass off in college. Like, I could get down with some NCAA football. That was about all we played. But I'm very out of practice. So no, the answer is no.
Well, maybe there's a listener out there who believes that they could win $3 million with their fantasy football team. And as we get ready for our fantasy football drafts, we want to make sure to remind you to check out the Fantasy Football Today podcast. Our fantasy team is recording an episode every single weekday through the end of the year. No days off. Sleepers, breakouts, busts, mock drafts on the air, listener interaction via email and Twitter. It's the best way to win your league. Subscribe to the Fantasy Football Today podcast anywhere you get your podcasts. We had some listener interaction on Twitter and via email of feedback from our ACC win totals. Of course, you know, go back if you have not yet, because it is what you need to get ready for the upcoming season. We've already done the Pac-12, we've already done the Big 12, and we've already done the ACC. And in the ACC Atlantic, our most recent episode, we were talking about the Syracuse Orange, just both all in on going over the FanDuel sportsbook number of 5.5. As time has moved on and as more sportsbooks are releasing lines, that has proven, as we suggested, to be a little bit low. So as we revisit the Syracuse Orange, at least briefly, before we get into the Big Ten West, where would you start to think about an under for the Syracuse Orange? Because I've seen that we've got 7.5 out there. And I, with my confidence and with my picking Syracuse to be the second best team in the Atlantic and maybe the second best team in the ACC, I've got my own thoughts. You know, where would you start to get jumping on the other side and start to maybe believe your initial inclination, which was that there would be a little bit of a step back with the loss of Eric Dungy following a breakout season?
I mean, my formal like Phil Steele filling out the schedule for each team in the country on my own with my own pen, my formal schedule prognostication for Syracuse is 7-5. So I would be on the under there.
Yeah.
But I think I've made it very clear. Syracuse is, of all the teams we've talked about up to this point, we're about to hit the Big Ten today. I think Syracuse is one of the teams I am least comfortable picking one way or the other for. So the better question is you. Where would you fall, and where would you start to lean under?
At 7.5, I'm over. At 8, I'm over.
Okay.
At
8.5?
At 8.5, I do get nervous. At 8.5, I'm not operating in lock territory, and I'm not going to give away my win totals locks, but I will say that on the draft board, we do have, even at working with a 7.5 number, I'm still looking at that Syracuse over. But at 8.5, I start to get nervous, and at 9, I am a push to under. There's no way that you're going to get me locking in 9-3 or better.
Yeah. That sounds reasonable.
Like Liberty, Maryland, Western Michigan, and Holy Cross to go with that Clemson game in the month of September, and then you close the season with Duke, Louisville, and Wake Forest. I just think the beginning and the end of those schedules provide enough wins, or what should be wins, to where being able to hit 8 shouldn't be too much from that middle stretch of NC State, Pitt, Florida State, and Boston College.
Yeah, it seems like I wonder where the juice is on that 7.5 number. It seems like the most likely landing spot for Syracuse is 8.
Right.
But I wouldn't feel comfortable going under 7.5 because I've also, on this schedule, I've got them losing to Louisville, and I've got them losing to Maryland. I mean, they could be 2-0 in those games, and I'm all of a sudden 9-3. So I've also got them beating NC State at NC State. And, you never know. You just don't know with these ACC teams.
The anonymous Coastal Conference, according to
Barton
Simmons.
We're getting
a
little anonymous today, too. We're not anonymous. I wouldn't say Big Ten West is anonymous. We're definitely, we are in, we're very much in a evenly matched division with a lot of potential outcomes.
All right, are you ready to count them up?
Count them up.
As much as I think it's the under is a safe play, like, I can't even.
Count them up. Count them up. How many games are going to win this fall?
I can't fathom who wins. I just can't. I don't see it. It's not on there.
It's not
the schedule I'm looking at. Unless there's another schedule somewhere.
Now, to Barton's point about the Big Ten West.
Chip.
Yeah.
Before we get going here, I'd like to shout out Alex Kaplan and Statue Hunter on Twitter. A couple guys have hit me up, and they've determined with certainty where the comment about I don't see it on that, unless there's another schedule out there comment. And it's a very fitting team.
Okay.
Apparently that was said last year looking at Louisville's schedule. Which makes that, brings a lot of pride to that
comment. That you called that.
Because that was a strong-ass hit.
Yeah. Was there any win total that you felt more comfortable about than going under on the Cards as they continued to fail to cover the spread every single game?
Yeah, I can't remember. I either went 3-3 last year or 3-2 on my win total picks, but it was one of those where it's like, I felt like I should have gotten just almost like some added payout for how strong the Louisville pick was. But I don't think it works like that in Vegas, unfortunately.
All right. So to your point, we are dealing with a division where I don't see any of these teams with win totals at 10. And with the numbers we're using, we're not even seeing any win totals at 9. So let's begin our discussion here with one of the teams at the top with an 8.5 win total, and that's going to be the Wisconsin Badgers. 7-5 in the regular season last year after starting the year up in the preseason top 10. So we're looking at, with an 8.5 win total, we're looking at Wisconsin to be competing for the Big Ten West title, and yet just like what we had in the Big Ten West last year and just like what we saw in the Big Ten West the year before, we are estimating by these win totals that there is not a college football playoff contender among that division. So Wisconsin, 8.5, Jonathan Taylor's back. We've got changeover at quarterback with Alex Hornibrook gone. Sometimes that's a good thing. How are you feeling about Paul Chryst going into year 5?
I think my big hang up here is that we're probably going to be operating with the true freshman at quarterback. I think aside from that, because Wisconsin has been a team that I've kind of overlooked, sidestepped, have been sort of just I've just sort of envisioned this bland 8-4 year because of what the taste of our mouth from last season. But I think if you really like consider what last season was, why it happened like that, what this season is, like no one saw. I mean, 2 years ago they're 13-1 and they had so much coming back from that team. And so the expectations were really high. I mean, so often it just, that's not how college football works. We're just, you're supposed to be good because everyone comes back and so you're good. And they had it, they dealt with a lot of injuries. They were young in the secondary. They had some preseason pass catcher issues with guys that were supposed to be good, really good players for them getting suspended or injured and things like that. And so I circled back around and they had this sort of cover of Sports Illustrated offensive line and all that stuff. Right. And so now you circle back and all those offensive linemen are gone. The expectations are a little lower. The defense returns enough guys to think, you know, they got a chance to be good, but they don't necessarily have any sort of national names defensively. I mean, there's good players. Isaiah Loudermilk's really good. Scott Nelson is looks like he's going to be a really good player at safety. Like there's players there, but the sort of guys that you that every Joe college football fan knows aren't there. And so all that to say is like this strikes me as a team that's going to be undervalued, and especially when we're going to talk about the loss of that offensive line as a negative, when we all know full well that they've just got the next crop of hog mollies.
6'5", 330. Like they've got beer and cheese.
They're eating the same training table as those guys that came before them.
Right.
You know, like, and so and Jonathan Taylor's back. I think Jake Ferguson is ready to take a big step forward at tight end. Danny Davis was impressive last year, receiver. He's back. AJ Taylor's back. They got skill back. Offensive line's going to be fine. Defense will be better this year if they stay healthy. A lot of those young guys in the secondary will be improved. All that. So then you just circle back around and you're like, okay, freshman quarterback. How much is that going to sting? And I don't know. The more I think about it, the more I don't really care about that either. And because is he going to be worse than Alex Hornibrook? So I actually, my schedule has them projected at 8-4, what I just sort of mapped out, but I'm all of a sudden, the closer we get, the more I feel like I am certainly not playing an under in this one. And I've got this kind of hunch that we could be looking at another sort of 10-2 type of season.
That would be a return to what has mostly been the standard, not just for Paul Chryst, but really for the Wisconsin program for the last decade. And I think it gets worse. I'm not only on the under, but I think that I've got this at 6-6, 7-5. And
I can't get there. All right, you gotta sell me on this.
Okay. your draw, and granted, like, nine game conference schedule, there it is not quite like the Pac-12 or the Big 12 where it's basically round robin. There is still some like better schedule, worse schedule. Wisconsin, now granted, they do get two of these games at home, but Wisconsin gets Michigan, Michigan State, and Ohio State from the other division. That is not a favorable Big Ten draw for a Big Ten West team.
No.
I look at the conclusion of the schedule, and the Iowa, Nebraska, Purdue at Minnesota to close. I don't think that Wisconsin is a for sure winner in any of those games. I think that those are all truly, as we will continue to unpack this throughout the show, like in a Big Ten West that is, you know, very difficult to figure out at times, and you feel like all these teams are kind of jumbled together. Basically, anybody but Illinois in my book, it would not surprise me if they are representing the Big Ten West at the end of the season. So if I've got Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, if I've got, you know, games at the end of the schedule where I'm not seeing for sure wins like this, that's where I think the only certainties that you have are South Florida, Central Michigan, Kent State, and Illinois. And if everything else is a top up, it is a toss up, and I can only get to four or five wins feeling confident about the Badgers having an advantage, then 8.5 is just far too much for me to jump. I'm not going to go that far for this Wisconsin team, given some of the just given the lack of certainties beyond Jonathan Taylor being really, really good in my book.
Yeah, I get all that, and then the schedule is a good argument and a good point. What I circle back to is, as everybody gets distracted by the shiny things in the Big Ten West, oh, it's this new division with Scott Frost and Nebraska coming up, and look at PJ Fleck and Jeff Brohm, you know, building these programs, and oh man, another year Northwestern suddenly ends up in the Big Ten championship game, and it's like now everyone's all of a sudden forgetting about Wisconsin, it feels like. And part of me just feels like this is set up for Wisconsin to be overlooked. And I think that, I just think this is going to be a really good team. I do feel like, I don't know where I was about to go. I do feel like, when you talk about like scheduling and you know, playing those cross division games, like there's other teams. I know where I was going to go. I'm sorry. What I was trying to say is I was surprised. I'm a little bit disappointed this number is higher. Like is this high? Like I would have liked to have seen it at 7.5 because Vegas isn't letting us get off easy on this one. But given where it's at, I'm staying away from it. And I'm even actually projecting them under, but I'm sort of fading myself on that.
And like, to be fair to Wisconsin, I do not think it is impossible to imagine that Michigan will go into Camp Randall and lose. I do sure. not think it is impossible for Michigan State or Northwestern. So we could be looking up and Wisconsin will be on the road going to Illinois 6-0 after playing five straight home games. I mean, I said the schedule was a bad thing, but I should admit that at least in terms of home away splits, the fact that you're just posted up at home from September 7th through mid-October, like that can be advantageous with jump around and Camp Randall being one of those stadiums where I do actually take home field advantage into consideration.
Yeah, and even in my 8-4, I've actually got them losing to Michigan and Michigan State. And if you think about that, like that's two home losses in big time games. That's in some ways that's unlikely they lose both of them. It might be unlikely they win both of them, but you know, there's a pretty good chance they catch one of those teams. So my 8-4 could easily tick up to 9-3 with just a cross division win there. So I'm warning the people out there. Wisconsin's, there's something sneaky about this team this year, I think.
The Nebraska Cornhuskers, we are also have them pegged right now with win totals from the odds makers set at 8.5. And I'm curious to see where you stand on this. I was on with our friend of the podcast, Danny Cannell. I was sitting in on Cannell and Bell, and you know we were discussing the contrarian play, right? Which is, you know, if you want to jump on the other side of Scott Frost Nebraska hype, like you were just talking about. I mean, it is the story right now for reasons that are both nostalgic for the past, but also very knowing about Scott Frost and what he has been able to do in his brief coaching career, and the expectations for what he can do, particularly activating a fan base, a university, and a football program like he has at Nebraska. If you want to sell any Nebraska stock, then this is an opportunity where you might be able to get some people to buy it at a pretty high price. So after the saying is out there, right? 0-6, 4-2. It was two different seasons. You look at Nebraska and you just think, if that 4-2 second half of the season Nebraska Cornhuskers comes into this year, they attack this schedule, they can win the Big Ten West. So at 8.5, Barton, who has held so much Scott Frost stock throughout his time, his portfolio is just burgeoning. What's the pick here?
Yeah, I'm gonna collect on my Scott Frost stock, but I'm not gonna do it with an overplay here. And I have been on the record earlier this summer as taking the over here, and I've flipped to the under, flipped from 9-3 to 8-4, and to me it's totally about, like, the reason this is the perfect year to. For Scott Frost because of the schedule. I mean, the schedule is a joke. I mean, they go their road games are at Colorado, at Illinois, at Minnesota, at Purdue, at Maryland. They get Iowa at home, Wisconsin at home, the cross division.
That Ohio State game is trap city for Ryan Day.
Except for the fact that everyone is going to be talking about it. Nebraska's probably going to be 4-0. They're going to be, you know, they may be a top, they'll probably be ranked in the top 25. That'll be, I mean, yes, but it won't be overlooked. And so, they probably lose to, like, the only, you can look at their schedule and you can make a case that they will be favored in every game on the schedule because they will, you know, they'll, with the exception of Ohio State, sorry, because they'll probably be favored their first four. And if they win those, as long as they play Ohio State competitively, they'll probably still be favored against Northwestern. So then they'll be sitting there with 5-1, probably still be favored at Minnesota, Indiana, Purdue. Like, at that point, if they have had a good year, then by the time they get to Wisconsin, then they'll be considered a really good team. So they, you know, they that's sort of a toss up, and Iowa's sort of a toss up for the same reason. So all that to say is, I think the schedule's really good, but to me, When I look at the roster, I still don't know if I see a 9-win roster yet. Defensively, they still got some ways to go. They were bad last year on defense. I know Adrian Martinez is that dude, and or at least that's what we think he is. But you know, they lose Stanley Morgan, Maurice Washington. Their running back that they're expecting big things out of is getting in all kinds of trouble. They were still 4-8. And so if they get to 8-4, which is an under, that's still a hell of a turnaround. So I think you can both be hanging on to your Scott Frost stock while also picking the under.
I'm on the over. I think I'm signing up for all the juice. I'm signing up for all the hype. I'm signing up for just the dream of the 90s is alive in Lincoln.
Is it just, okay, so why? Is it the schedule or is it the team?
It is the team. It is the quarterback specifically. Specifically, it is the quarterback. I believe that, The first time it really stunned me, and the first time that I had to start thinking critically about what I believed Adrian Martinez is going to be this season, it was when the like first early Heisman odds came out, and he was like maybe the fifth or sixth name on the board. And it has been a long time since we've taken a Nebraska quarterback that seriously, that they're going to have the fifth, sixth, or seventh best odds to win the Heisman Trophy. Like, is Adrian Martinez going to be one of these individual stars? And I kind of tend to think that what we've seen and what we know from Scott Frost's offense is that it can make individually, it can make a very good to great quarterback elite in terms of production at the college level. I don't think that means that Adrian Martinez is destined to, you know, go and be Marcus Mariota. I don't think that he's necessarily even like, I think Mackenzie Milton, like expectations from a production level, I don't think that is too much to ask from Adrian Martinez year two. I mean, that whole move of I'm going to throw him into the fire and he's going to fail some and he's going to learn, but coming back year two, he's going to be that much more mentally up to speed. I think that's valuable. And when we've got a division where finding those kind of game changing quarterbacks is very, very difficult. I think that can be a separator to where we see Nebraska as a 9-3 team.
Yeah. I mean, the last thing I'm going to do is get on you about hyping Scott Frost in Nebraska. I've been on that train, and 9-3 is not going to surprise me in the least. And if anything, I'm just starting to fade the fact that everybody's on this train.
Right. Yeah. right. And I want to be a part of it. I don't want to have to like jump on the other side and then ask for my spot back on the boat.
Right.
I'm going to just stay here in the captain seat, and I understand that the waves might get a little rocky. There might be some points in the middle of the season. Like, Nebraska is not established enough in terms of its talent and in terms of its roster where we can trust that Nebraska team to not go lay an egg. Like, they've got a lay an egg loss to a team that they're going to be favored to beat, and that will not surprise me. But if you're asking me to pick 8.5 and I've got to sort of align my stock with certain Big Ten West teams and fade them in other ones to sort of keep the count somewhat in line, I got them 9-3. I'm going Nebraska over.
Yeah, and I'm hopeful that I'm still allowed on the ferry late in the season. If I just sort of throw out a real timid under, I think I've done enough, right?
You have some
built up equity in this Nebraska train.
Equity is the operative word here for you and Scott Frost. It started as the University of Dividend Returns or something. Oh,
right. Residual income.
Yeah, residual.
University of residual income. Yeah.
Guys, I don't know why we should stop picking UCF to cover these spreads. They're going to keep covering them.
I was, you know what? Like, I've been waiting to find another University of Residual Income. There was never University of Residual Income last year, unless you're talking about fading Louisville. And Scott Frost is still the most recent University of Residual Income. We'll see if we can find somebody in 2019.
It feels like the Purdue Boilermakers fan base already got a win or an over or a division title just by the fact that Jeff Brohm didn't go to Louisville. That was like the talking point. It's like, oh, Petrino's gone. They're going to go make their swing. They're going to bring him home. This is going to be it. And Brohm decided, as many coaches have before, like, I've only been here 2 years. I have made promises to elite talent like Rondale Moore that we are going to build something special. I want to continue to build here at Purdue. So after what was a little bit of, you know, what was a breakthrough season for the Boilermakers to be able to get into the postseason, or breakthrough two seasons, really, this win total is now all the way up to 8. Now, the last time...
This is shocking.
...that Purdue won 8 games was a long time ago. 8.
Wow.
Hype.
Where's this number from?
All
Big Ten. Purdue at 8. Heavily juiced to the under, but Purdue at 8.
Wow. All right. 8. So Purdue is the third highest number in the West, huh?
Yeah.
And that's your basic 3-point term?
Sorry. As my autoplay pops up when I'm looking to check that number on the CBS story. All right. So 8. Wow. All right. You want to take this one, or am I taking the lead here?
Oh, I'm under. I'll take the lead on this. There's two reasons, and first I'll address the fact that this is a Purdue team that, as I look at the personnel, it feels incomplete, and I'm willing to be proven wrong, and I'm willing to admit that there's an element of player development that, you know, Jeff Brohm and his staff would like to be able to show off and say, hey, well, you know what? Like, we're bringing back all these players on defense. And I know that you don't know a whole bunch of these pieces on offense, but they've been training in the system. You know, they're good. They're ready to go. I refuse to allow Rondale Moore to be one piece that I become so infatuated with that I'm going to start putting Purdue up against a team that I feel more confident in Nebraska. I feel more confident in Wisconsin, and I am more excited and intrigued about whether Minnesota is going to take a step forward and whether Northwestern can continue than I am confident that Purdue right now is ready for a big jump.
Let me just say, if this over hits, I'll be thrilled. That will be fun to watch. A 9-3 Purdue team after a 6-7 year where they upset Ohio State. And, oh, yeah, by the way, they also got beat 63-14 in the Music City Bowl by Auburn. That will be an incredible testament to Brohm's program building. And like you, I'm also on the under. And like you, perhaps I'm underestimating that element of it, of the program building side and the players that have been in the program being better. But I mean, they got 9 starters back on defense, a defense that really wasn't that good. They've got 3 starters back on offense, an offense that was good, but a little inconsistent.
Sure.
Like Rondale Moore's good. Bryson Hopkins is an NFL tight end.
And everywhere that Brohm's been, the offenses have been explosive. Yes. Right. All fair, all willing to rock with that. But there has not been any kind of consistency, even as he's started to build up. It has been more flashes than some sustained level of success that leads me to believe that everything is in place for a big elevation of where this Purdue team is.
And I think a problem when you're banking on that over, one problem is they're not taking 3 just no-brainer wins in their non-conference. I mean, they're going to Nevada, who they should beat, certainly. But, I mean, that's not a bad Group of 5 team. They're playing Vanderbilt, and they're playing TCU. I guess TCU could be a win if Purdue is a 9-win team. I mean, if they're better than we think, but I would expect TCU to win that game. And I think Vanderbilt is a really tough game early in the season, given, I mean,
No. Now's the time of year where you're locked in on Vanderbilt. There's not a lot of college football information and not a lot of college football talk. So it's like when you've got any kind of proximity to it, you just soak it up. I'm sure that right now you're soaking up any Vanderbilt chatter you can get.
But I'm actually not that bullish on Vanderbilt, but I do think that Vanderbilt is, when you just sort of compare rosters, Vanderbilt's further along in their program development under Derek Mason than Jeff Brohm is. And they do have, I mean, the 3 guys they brought to media day. I mean, Derek Mason is not shying from the idea that those guys are NFL high round NFL draft picks. And so we don't want to get off on a Vanderbilt tangent here, but I mean, that's 3 tough games. And then when you talk about, then it's all about sort of all right, where do the wins come from? You know, someone in this conference has got to lose some as well. So you talk about PJ Fleck in Minnesota going to Penn State, you know, Mike Locksley, that's Maryland is not this totally like crippled program that is just is a year zero. I mean, they've got some players that Iowa, I mean, Illinois, like we'll talk about Illinois, but I don't think that they're as bad as probably people are giving them credit for. Nebraska, we just talked about. Northwestern has been as consistent as any team in the Big Ten under Pat Fitzgerald, Wisconsin, and then Indiana. So I just, it's hard for me. Like, I feel like if you're going to get 9 wins, you have to be clearly a top tier team. And it's hard for me to take that, get to the top tier team level with Purdue.
I agree. So this, I just pulled up some other numbers. Purdue in the Las Vegas Superbook, we were using the FanDuel Sportsbook in New Jersey. The Las Vegas Superbook number for Purdue is 7.
That seems more reasonable to me.
What would you take at 7?
I'm begrudgingly under, but I think this is like I've actually got them at 5 and 7. But I don't love that.
No, you don't want to be there rooting against Rondale Moore and Jeff Brohm for them to go 5 and 7.
No. And I don't even expect them to go 5 and 7. But I also have expectations for, like, to me, Minnesota strikes me as a team that's I have a little more trust in this year. And I've got Purdue beating them, but I got Minnesota winning more games. Iowa, I trust them more. I trust Nebraska more. I trust Northwestern more. I just think that there's some, like, I would lean towards under this year for Purdue with the caveat that, like, I think next year, given the way they recruited in 2019, given the freshmen they're going to be playing, I think that 2020 could be that, regardless what the record is this year, 2020 could be that breakthrough year where they're contending for a division title.
Coming up,
so
on,
I think this is the year before the year.
Got the year, the game before the. They're 1 year away from being 1 year away.
Right.
Coming up on the other side, Kirk Ferentz, the Iowa Hawkeyes, Northwestern, Minnesota, and Illinois. As we wrap up the Big Ten West, all of that next.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a CAN model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire, now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Hello, everyone. It's Michael Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
The Iowa Hawkeyes enter this season, like having, I guess not recently, but certainly in this, within the context of the last several years, it's just become like a little bit of an NFL factory, right? Big Ten's Boston College. You're going to count on them to win like 8 games and produce like 3 NFL draft picks in the first 3 rounds.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this will be no different. They probably have, don't be surprised if they have 2 more first round draft picks. I almost expect it.
One of those, by the way, our number here is at 7.5. Nathan Stanley, is that one of them for you?
He may be. I mean, first of all, like I have sold a good bit of the Nate Stanley stock I bought before the season last year. But he has NFL traits. Yes. So, but he is not one of the first rounders.
What is Clayton? Speaking of, what's Clayton Thorson doing right now?
He's in a camp. He's getting paid. He's getting a paycheck that says NFL on it.
And so that counts.
He got drafted. I think he was like a fifth round pick or something.
All right. So as Iowa goes into this coming season, our non-con, of course, we've got the Cy-Hawk trophy. That game's going to be in Ames, having to go play Matt Campbell in Iowa. Then they've got Miami, Ohio, and Middle Tennessee. So the outside of the game against the Cyclones, there should be a pair of winnable games there. But then once we start to get into the schedule, you know, we've got Penn State showing up. You've got to go to Ann Arbor to play Michigan. You avoid Ohio State, though Iowa, you know, always loves Ohio State, especially when they do end up visiting Iowa City. So at 7.5, how do you see this Iowa team looking in 2019?
This is in some ways like the anti-Nebraska, in the sense of like Nebraska, they have an over schedule and an under roster. I think Iowa has an over roster and an under schedule.
Mm.
Like, you know, going Michigan and Penn State cross division is not ideal. They go to Michigan, they go to Northwestern, they go to Wisconsin, they go to Nebraska. Like it's not an ideal road slate. But I'm on the over here. I'm going to trust the roster a little bit and not just make assumptions about what other people are going to be. Because again, I mean, so Nate Stanley's back. Maybe he is a little closer to what we hoped he would be last year. I think they return all their running backs. Their offensive line is this kid, Tyler Linderbaum, stepping in as a redshirt freshman at center, who's supposed to be a stud. So basically, if he's good, if Levi Paulson's good, who I guess is their other projected starter, their tackles are, I would assume, probably as good as any in the country from as far as bookends. The Tristan Wirfs is one of the first rounders I was talking about, I think has potential to get there. Defensively, AJ Epinesa didn't start last year and had 10.5 sacks. Like Iowa has this amazing knack for just sort of hiding first round talent, you know, like,
yeah.
They had two first round draft picks at tight end and, you know, you watch a game and you might not even know it, but there's, you know, AJ Epinesa and Chauncey Golston are two really good players that didn't even start last year who combined for like 15 sacks. I think, you know, they got a bunch of really good players in the secondary that, and just, they always have good linebackers and they always develop. So I just think this is a real like rock solid, 22 players, offense and defense. And the schedule is tricky, but I'm just going to trust that this Kirk Ferentz kind of knows how to coach a little bit. He's done this a few times. And so I think they're going to go over. I got them losing to Iowa State, losing at Michigan, losing at Wisconsin, and winning the rest.
9-3?
I got them 9-3.
Well, I love that because Iowa winning a crowded and confusing Big Ten West is pretty perfect. Like that, when you don't know who's going to come out on top, if you're not going to saddle up with Paul Chris in Wisconsin, you better saddle up with Kirk Ferentz in Iowa, or you can be a nutcase like me and just take all of the Scott Frost hype and run with that, even if the come down could be potentially horrendous. I'm on the under here, and I've got them losing at Iowa State. I've got them losing at Wisconsin. I've got them losing at Nebraska. I've got them losing at Michigan. And then either the Penn State at home or at Northwestern, I think they could take one of those. And so this under is like 7-5 is the way that I've penciled it out. But to your point, would not be surprised if this is 8-4. I would be surprised if it's 9-3. And I understand that when the margins are so slim, that would that might sound confusing. But I do think that at Wisconsin and at Nebraska are daunting trips to be taking in November when, you know, outside of a Nathan Stanley that has yet to arrive, where I don't know if you've got one player who can take over the game.
But when do they ever have a player that can take over the game?
Akram Wadley. I am an Akram Wadley truther. I believe that dude.
I mean, I'm an Akram Wadley guy too, but he went undrafted and he was like, yeah, I guess you like Akram Wadley could bust out and have like a wow play. But Akram Wadley never got the, like he never, I would never say he took over, right?
That's true.
I don't know. Here's the thing about this Iowa. Here's why you won't be surprised if they're 9-3. Because this Big Ten West heap of parity is just, they're going to be close games every week. So you won't be surprised if Iowa's 9-3. You won't be surprised if Wisconsin's 9-3. You won't be surprised. You shouldn't be surprised, Chip, if Northwestern's 9-3. Like, it's just about who wins close games, right?
I love the fact that you call it a heap, because that feels right. Feels like there's a whole bunch of clothes on the bed that we still need to fold before dinner. I don't know, man. Minnesota, Northwestern, put it in the shelves and let's fold it up and let's get out of here. Like that's it is a heap of pretty good. The Big Ten West is a heap of pretty good.
So then it's just going to boil down to like no one knows. You know, it's just going to boil because like – I can't sit like if I win this 9-3, if I'm right on 9-3, then I will have I can't tell you that my expertise allowed me to expertly predict that the safety that wins them a 15-13 game against Northwestern, you know, was something I saw coming back in August, or the, you know, the pick six and then the 8-minute drive to win 22-19 against Minnesota is something I saw coming. You know what I mean? Like it's just going to be, there's going to be so many games like that in the Big Ten West this year. And so that's what I think is kind of fun about this division.
The Northwestern Wildcats were Big Ten West champions last year, making it to the Big Ten title game. They did lose to Ohio State, but to be able to get there, certainly a great sort of momentous and momentum-building turn for Pat Fitzgerald. I mean, this is a team, 10 wins in 2015, 10 wins in 2017, 9 wins, and one of those, again, being able to win the division last year. There is a level of expectations and consistency that I have for this Northwestern program. The win total, as I'm seeing it here, our FanDuel number in New Jersey is 6.5. Our Las Vegas Superbook number is at 6. And so yeah, with Hunter Johnson coming in there at quarterback, it's going to be very easy to get hung up on that, but I will bring back up the name, invoke the name of Clayton Thorson and say, with the success that Northwestern had with that quarterback play, I don't think Hunter Johnson can or should be your difference maker and why you're taking it over. I am taking it over, but it's probably for other reasons. I'll let you go first. Where are you at on the Wildcats?
Well, yeah, like the Hunter Johnson thing, all he does is just sort of continue this Northwestern quarterback factory. You know, it's low key one of the most remarkable runs right now at quarterback is what Nick McCall, the quarterback and offensive coordinator at Northwestern, has done dating. Cause he goes back to Bowling Green where he had like Omar Jacobs and Josh Harris. And I think Omar Jacobs got drafted. Maybe they both got drafted. He's had a quarterback drafted like he has coached a quarterback that would go on to get drafted. His starting quarterback would go on to get drafted each season, like 17 of the last 19 seasons or something insane like that. And so Hunter Johnson just sort of continues this trend of guys who are, we at least expect Hunter Johnson to get drafted. So that's both a good thing, but it's also, you know, don't count on Hunter Johnson being the thing that sort of puts Northwestern over the top. So I don't even, it's almost a push getting Hunter Johnson on board. So I'm very, This is another like very reluctant under. I acknowledge that Pat Fitzgerald is probably a top. You could argue, I don't know. You could argue top 10 coach in college football.
And how are you going to be on the other side of just the legend, Joe Gaziano? How are you going to be on the other side of Patty Fisher, Pat Fitzgerald incarnate? I mean, this is a Northwestern team that where we got to look at the Wildcats and you talk about where Pat Fitzgerald stands. I give him that player development, program development credit. Like, you've been there for so long that you've put your system in place, and I do not agree with you on your stance about cell phones and college football attendance, but damn, I do respect what you're able to do in terms of getting a program like that to perform at a consistent level of we're not just a team that expects to make bowl games. We're a team that expects to be right there with the best teams in the conference.
You're right. I mean, all of that is right. And I've got them with an embarrassing number of L's on my schedule here.
It's hard. They got to go to Wisconsin. They've got to go to Nebraska, right there in the middle of the season. To Stanford to start. Ohio State comes on a Friday night. That's another weird game. Friday night, Ohio State, Northwestern.
I feel like we've seen this before. Wasn't it like a Friday night? Maybe it was a Saturday night when Ohio State or someone went into Northwestern and needed like a safety or something to win. What was that? Was that like 2016 maybe?
There was the I think that Northwestern got game day before an Ohio State game, but then Ohio State went and beat the brakes off them. Like, you know, yep. Like the excitement had really, really peaked and you were like, oh yeah, here we go. And then,
I vaguely remember like being at a wedding or something. And there was like a night game with Northwestern and some other team that was a top five team or something. And I think I even had money on Northwestern maybe. And,
they did cover a 26 point spread in Columbus in 2016 when Ohio State was number six in the country.
That's got to be the game I'm thinking of.
24-20, Buckeyes squeak out a win.
So, anyways, yes. Like, Ryan Day, like, you talk about that Nebraska being a trap game. That Northwestern game may be the real trap game for Ryan Day. So I just, you know, in an effort to be honest and handle this process with integrity, I have to hand losses somewhere. And Northwestern is just the type of team that gets a couple of those losses that someone's got to land when you're making the preseason picks. So I guess all I can say is I'm on the under, but don't take my word. Don't take my advice here. Like, just understand what Northwestern does.
I am emphatically on the over. And that's,
what's the number here again?
6.5.
Yeah, I mean, right. Without having to determine where the wins come from, and without having to piece the puzzle together with the rest of the Big Ten West, it sure feels like 6.5 is too low. So I do not disagree.
The Minnesota Golden Gophers, as the PJ Fleck has been rowing his boat, and I think that Fleck has gone, and this year will really determine, third year, by the way, here at Minnesota. This will determine whether you are looking at him as not the butt of a joke, but at least a sort of comical figure within college football because of his rowing the boat. Cold with pressure turns into diamonds, the different ways that he uses messaging to try and drive home things with the players and with the fans. This kind of feels like a, we're on the edge of something type season. They go 5-7 year one, they go 7-6 year two. And now they've got tons of starters back. Things appear to be in place for a big step forward. So with a win total of 7.5, do you think it comes this year for the Golden Gophers?
I mean, this is, I have sacrificed Northwestern, put them on the altar at the for the sake of picking this over for Minnesota. I mean, I'm on the over here, and it's really about, I mean, for one, this is another program that, I mean, their cross division games are Maryland and Rutgers.
Man, no Michigan, no Michigan State, no Ohio State. What a gift for PJ Fleck.
They've got, and then I mean, their quarterbacks, whether it's Tanner Morgan or Zach Anakstad, like those guys don't necessarily get me super juiced, but I do look at their team across the board, and there are, like, I see, you know, Tyler Johnson's back. Rashad Bateman had a big freshman year. Carter Coughlin is a big time pass rusher.
What happened with Rodney Smith last year?
What's up?
Rodney Smith is still on the roster, right? Running back?
Did he retire or something?
Injuries.
I could be wrong on that, but he's on the roster I'm looking at. But now that you mention that, for some reason, like, I feel like Minnesota had some guy that retired.
Rodney Smith knocked out for the year with a knee injury early in September last year.
That was 2018. So Rodney Smith missed last year.
He missed last year, and now he's got a sixth year of eligibility.
Okay. So Rodney Smith was just but he was a good back. Like, in I remember 2017, he was a baller.
He's a really good back. If he can be 75% of full health, then, you know, that between him and Muhammad Ibrahim, that is an awesome, awesome backfield for Minnesota.
So, I mean, like, there's a lot to like. I know who I was thinking of here. I think Shannon Brooks was the one that had some sort of off the field issue and perhaps is not on the team anymore. Because he had a pretty good 2017 too, as I remember. Either way, they got players, and, you know, I think if we're projecting sort of another step forward, if we look at a little bit of a favorable schedule, like, I think 8 wins is a place they can get to, especially with if they can win on the road at Fresno State, beat a pretty good FCS team in South Dakota State and Georgia Southern. I mean, if they can get 3-0, that's a pretty good start.
And finally, and by the way, I'm on the over too. And finally, the Illinois Fighting Illini, Lovie Smith, and the fight and transfer portals are going into year 4 with Lovie at the helm. Win total set at 4.5. The win totals for the Illini with Smith have been 3 wins in 16, 2 wins in 17, 4 wins in 2018. The non-conference is manageable. But at the same time, we're talking about an Illinois team where I think some of the losses that we were totaling up, as I'm going over for Minnesota, over for Northwestern, over for Nebraska, I do think that Illinois was on the other side of some of these L's at 4.5. What's where are you lining up with Illinois?
I'm actually on the over here.
Jeez.
I think they can get to 5. Basically, they got to beat Akron, UConn, and Eastern Michigan. That should be doable. So that's 3. That's a good start. And then they got to find, I think they're better than Rutgers, and they got to find one more win somewhere. I think this team with 10 starters back on defense, 7 back on offense, you know, I think they can, they got some, now I'm not necessarily advocating for sort of overhauling your roster through the transfer portal, but they did get, surely a few of these guys that they've gotten out of the transfer portal can play. 1 or 2, maybe. I mean, so I just think that this is, I think they can get another win. I mean, Lovie Smith has been, been a weird grind for them. Really bad the first couple of years, but they made some progress last year. And if they just keep on making a little bit of progress, I don't know, man. 5 wins seems attainable.
I'm on the under. I think it's another 4-8 season. And I wonder if Lovie Smith is coaching the Illini for the rivalry game at the end of the year against Northwestern.
If they get, I mean, if it's a 4-8 year, then this is the last year. I mean, you can't,
how sad is this? I really like it. Might the way that I'm playing out their season in my head, you know, you beat Akron, you beat UConn, you beat Eastern Michigan, but then lost to Nebraska, lost to Minnesota, lost to Michigan, lost to Wisconsin, lost at Purdue. And then all of a sudden November 2nd against Rutgers is like a must win to be able to salvage whatever's left in the season.
Well, right. But I think if there's progress made with this team, then you would hope that you can't just log losses to all those teams you just log losses to, with the exception of maybe like Michigan. Like, I think you would hope that Illinois is taking a step, or even if they lose to Wisconsin, they'll play them closer. And, you know, it looks like they're improving. They go to Purdue and maybe they win that game. Like, I think that Rod Smith was the new OC last year, and they at least got a little bit of an identity, it felt like. They've got potentially, I guess, Isaiah Williams, the true freshman, could be coming in to run some, you know, some QB run stuff for that offense. I don't know, man. I'm not going to bet on it, but I feel like Lovie Smith is capable of improving this team, right?
Is it possible? I mean, what is Illinois football? Like, what is improving? Like, what is the ceiling right now? Because what I'm seeing is that these other programs in the division and even in the whole conference, if you want to extend it out to bring in Maryland, like you mentioned, but there are more than a handful of programs that have occupied the middle to bottom space of the conference that have things moving in a positive direction. And I cannot say that from my seat, I see that same kind of progress that we see at Purdue, at Minnesota, and at Nebraska right now. And if other programs are moving forward and you're spinning in place, then it is a hard, hard ceiling on what my expectations of that team is going to be.
The numbers, what did you say it was? Four?
Four and a half.
Four and a half. Yeah, because they're giving us the same wins that we're counting on, which is Akron, UConn, Eastern Michigan, Rutgers, and so.
And it's do you have one more?
That's gonna be a fun sweat if you're on the over. I'll say that. If you're on the under, that's gonna be a fun sweat probably.
As I play it out, I bet that if Lovie Smith catches that mid-season dismissal, I wonder if you get the bump. And it's a feisty Illinois team playing at home against Northwestern.
Oh yeah, yeah. If you're on the over,
right.
You know, it's almost like in a way, like you could argue that you should hope for that.
Right. I am
in a very morbid way.
Yes, I am. All right, we will be back later this week. We'll be tackling the Big Ten East, of course: Ohio State, Michigan State, Michigan, Penn State, Maryland. Can I do it all off the top of my head? Indiana and Rutgers. That's seven. There you go. He is Barton Simmons. You can follow him on Twitter @BartonSimmons. You can follow me @Chip_Patterson. Barton, thank you very much.
Reserve.